podcast is a member of WildGamesProductions.com and D20Radio.com.
This is Bill Owen, originally from Judges Guild, and you're listening to Save or Die Podcast. Welcome to the Save or Die Podcast, adventure number 51. I am your host, DM Vince.
The part of you sound Vince, better.
The part of DM Vince will be played by DM Mike.
Yes.
It's
and
okay.
With me is, and with me is DM Glenn.
Hi.
Hello. I thought we'd all take each other's parts for this one. I'll be DM Glenn, and DM Glenn will be DM Liz, and you'll be DM Vince, and I don't know who's going to be DM Mike.
Thank you. I thought I was transsexual. Okay.
Of course, if I was DM Vince, I should also be DM Liz, right? Because, hey, I'm Liz.
Oh, okay.
Hi, I'm Mike.
Anyway, DM Vince could not join us this week because of that dreadful bane of all gamers, real life.
What again?
Damn that real life.
Yeah.
What again?
But anyway, we're going to soldier on with episode 51. We're going to try something a little different this time. We're going to dedicate a whole episode to one product.
Really?
In particular, Pyramid of the Dragon, an adventure put out by Small Niche Games.
Yeah, for Labyrinth Lord. For Labyrinth Lord, which means it's compatible with a lot of most basics. Right?
Yep. And it is the author is Peter Spahn. I hope I have that last name right.
We've done an adventure of his before, haven't we?
Yeah, the
Moon Rising.
And the End of Lost Heroes.
Yep. So this is another one, only we're going to give this a more detailed coverage. So if you're worried about spoilers, don't listen to this episode.
Well, there goes most of our audience.
Oh, they don't care about spoilers. They love spoilers.
Oh, yeah.
I love spoilers.
Okay, when starting after what we've been doing in the email bag, don't listen to the rest of this episode. But before then, we're going to talk about what we've been doing in gaming since the last episode, which people haven't heard yet, but hopefully episode 50 will be up soon. Mm-hmm. What have you been doing, Glenn?
I've been recovering. I got an injury a couple weeks ago, which I'm pretty much mostly recovered, but now I have an infection in my...
A gaming injury?
No, not a gaming injury. More like a fisticuffs injury. But that's over with. Now I have a wonderful ear infection. I'm trying to get fixed before the convention. North Texas RPG Con is next week, folks. And,
I'm so excited.
And so I'm hoping to have something to run there, trying to get it together. Other than that, I'll be playing. We're all going to be there. Mike, Liz, Vince, and I. And I understand Full On Gamer is going to be there, too. So, good time, I hope, will be had by all. So, basically, I've been just preparing for that. How about you, Mike?
Well, I'm getting ready myself with a couple of adventures. Hopefully, if I have the time to run for probably Basic Expert, I'm going to try and run. But I suppose the big thing I'm proud of Classic D&D this week, or past couple of weeks, is I managed to get a copy of the Mensur Basic set in German.
Ooh!
Really? Yeah, yeah. I managed to do a trade with a guy for some extra Dungeoneers I had, and it's in German. I don't speak much German, but it's more of a conversation piece. I am going to take it up, though, to the con to get Mensur to sign, though.
Yes, definitely. I've got like a metric ton of stuff for people to sign to.
Yeah.
So, hopefully by that time you'll be getting your Mask of the Red Dead Death box set.
Ray.
Well, I don't want to rain on your parade, Mike, but thinking about it, I don't believe Frank Mincer is actually going to be at this year's North Texas RPG Con.
He's not?
What?
Because I seem to recall having seen him post that he was being chained to his desk at Eldritch Entertainment Games and wasn't going to be able to come to the convention. Tim Kask and Jim Ward are going to be there, but Frank Mincer is probably not.
Oh, man.
That's too bad. I wanted to talk to him. He's a nice guy. He's really fun to talk to, too.
He is a nice guy. I like him a lot.
Yeah. He's just a sweetheart. So what you been doing, Liz?
Much the same as Mike. We're trying to get all our ducks in a row for North Texas RPG Con. We've got our room set up there at the hotel. A friend of ours is coming down from New York to share the cost of the room with us. And
thank God.
Old school friend of Mike's who he hasn't seen in years now. So they'll have a fun time catching up together. And
he was in the gaming group from 1980.
And I understand that Fulon's going to be running some Battletech that he wants to get involved in.
Talking about nothing but Battletech for weeks, ever since basically Mike let him know that there was going to be a Battletech game for him. And it's been driving Mike nuts.
I know we've been recording Dinko's Hammerite going, Fulon, you're going, right? You're going? You're going?
Yeah, it's just, if Fulon can't make it, I think Ben will kill me.
Yeah.
Because he's got such a Battletech Jones going on.
I'll use that as leverage. It's like his blood's going to be on your hands if you don't.
It's true. Yes. True story.
Yes, it is. Well, that's great. So that's what we've been doing, huh?
Okay, well, I guess let's look on over in the email bag.
Over in the email bag. Liz, would you do the honors?
Very well.
I keep seeing this Ben address coming over. Yes, the emails.
Yes. And our first email comes to us from DM Drama Man. And Drama Man writes, "Hey, everyone. Really enjoyed podcast number 49. Crispy, I hear you on Swords and Wizardry and Labyrinth Lord. Both are great games. I do have the X. And while, lost my emails. I do have Basic Expert, and while it holds great nostalgic value for me, I think Labyrinth Lord may be easier to get new players to try. I offered a BX game at a convention last year and got no takers, while a Labyrinth Lord game I'm planning to run at a con this July is already half full.
Wow.
I have to also agree with Crispy that Ascending Armor class and base attack bonus, while not part of classic D&D, is a superior mechanic to the clunky attack tables that are dear to so many hearts within the OSR community. I think that if Gary had thought of it when first creating D&D, he would have surely ditched the tables. As it is merely a mechanic, I can't see why anyone finds it incompatible with the values of OSR other than out of pure spite. Vince, I know you are hesitant to share your opinion on such things. Try not to be too tactful. Liz, I'm curious if you've taken a look at the Mega Dungeon module, Stonehell Dungeon. I think you would like it, as kobolds play an important role in maintaining and repairing areas of the dungeon, as well as offering a kobold marketplace that serves as neutral ground for all monsters and even adventurers.
They sell kobolds?
Woohoo!
So you don't have to.
I too are small.
It's a kobold marketplace, right? So.
Yeah.
My players just discovered the marketplace, and it is providing ample ground for some fun role playing. How about some future shows devoted to the different OD&D books, especially the supplements? Maybe go even further back and discuss Chainmail and what elements of it made its way into D&D. Finally, how about some more reviews of new products that are being developed? Perhaps some of the stuff being put out by the D&D alumni within Eldritch Enterprises. Thanks for putting out a great podcast. I always cry when you start walking down that sad, lonely highway. Sincerely, DM Drama Man. I cry too.
He cries.
I do cry too.
It's true. It's true. Usually while she's running from something.
That's true.
Yes.
Well, let me say this about that. As far as ascending armor, as far as Thaco the charts, yeah, ditch the charts. That's why I like Thaco so much. And ascending armor class, I like his decent.
Although I think he overestimates, you know, Gary and much of the old crew came from wargaming roots, and
yes.
Wargaming is all about charts.
Oh, yes. Charts and tables.
At least from the 70s. But, you know, I think ascending doesn't necessarily kill old school myself.
It doesn't. It's just a pain. I think it's like a... yes.
Although, if I'm DM Vince, I suppose I should say something. Grump, grump. Anyway.
Did I...
But it's all, you know, up to people's individual tastes. I personally never had a problem with Thaco or Thak Zero in 1E when I, you know, played that most of the time. So, you know, yeah. It's all a matter of taste.
It's true. Descending armor class, okay, yeah, you may be right and stuff, but this is where I get hardline.
You may be right, but Glenn disagrees.
You may be right, but this is the way I learned it. And I don't feel like changing. I don't want to have to jump back and forth every time I look at something.
Well, that's a completely valid reason.
Because Glenn is lazy. Okay. as far as...
Hey, you kids today with your ascending babs and fortitude reflexes.
Yeah, tell me about it. Well, and you know what? As far as, like, he's got a half-full Labyrinth Lord game, bait and switch.
Well, I mean, it's the same game, essentially. And if people want to, you know, think, oh, well, I can only play a game that's in print, well, you know, if that's what it takes.
I would show up.
It may also be a matter of timing, though, because
as
Liz and I were talking about earlier, there was a convention, CoastCon, in Biloxi, Mississippi, we went to a few years ago, and there wasn't a single old school anything there.
Wow.
And I was looking, you know, at the beginning of this year to see, we weren't going to be able to make the con, but I was just curious. And they had half a dozen games.
Wow.
I think we mentioned it on an earlier episode about, you know, Basic Expert, 1E, 2E.
We can change people's opinions.
So, you know, he may very well be right, but it may have just been a one-off, you know. Try advertising Basic Expert again and see what happens.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you know, if you're getting people for Labyrinth Lord, well, it's basically the same game, so, hey, why not?
Yeah, say you're running a Basic Expert game using Labyrinth Lord rules.
And then show up with BX.
That could do it.
And
quite frankly, if you've got some people who are like, well, I wanted to play Labyrinth Lord, but since you called it Basic Expert with Labyrinth Lord rules, I don't want to play it. I doubt you probably don't want them in your game. To begin with, you know?
I'm thinking that there's a lot of people, I'm talking about like young people who only know D&D from 4E or Pathfinder, that you say Labyrinth Lord and they look at it as a brand spanking new game.
Well,
I don't want to play that old BX. I want to play this new Labyrinth Lord.
Well, that's, and as I've said before, that's part of the American culture, you know? Bad, old is bad, good is new.
Mm-hmm.
Good has always got to be better.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can't entirely blame gamers nowadays for thinking that way because we're indoctrinated like that.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. It's new. It's improved. Try this brand.
It's got to be better because it's new, you know. It's...
And Drum Man, yeah, we are going to get into some of the newer modules, just like the ones...
In fact...
Yes.
This very episode, I mean adventure, sorry. and, this adventure.
And, you know, we're going to, I'd like to, at the con, I think I will talk to Tim or somebody and see about us being able to review Eldritch Enterprises material. I'd really like
Send us some stuff, you know. We'll talk about it.
We'll have a series pretty soon called
I'm hoping to buy some Eldritch Enterprises stuff next weekend at the convention since Jim and Tim are going to be there. They better have some modules with them because I want to get some stuff.
I want to get a copy. I'm hoping to get a score a copy of Labyrinth Lord there if they have it.
Yeah.
I was disappointed last year. Nobody showed up with any Labyrinth Lord. It's like, I wanted this. You got BX. No, I wanted this.
But it's newfangled. Anyway, next email.
No, not yet. I want to say I have not taken a look at the Mega Dungeon Stonehill, although from what Drama Man describes, I think I would like to take a look at it. It does sound pretty cool, and not just because of the kobolds, although kobolds do play a good part.
They may have them at the convention.
Yeah.
If they do, well, I'm going to get one. It sounds cool.
From what I've seen on the blogs and stuff, Stonehill seems, I think they're releasing it in levels. Stonehill level one, Stonehill level two, things like that. I think they're developing it as they're developing it.
I'm not sure I like that.
I mean,
go ahead.
I was going to say, I was kind of okay with, I'm not sure how you pronounce it, Rapanathuk or Rapanathuk, or I'm not sure what it is, but Rapanathuk. Choose whichever pronunciation you like best. You know, it was 1 through 3, then 4 through 6. You know, you at least had it kind of bunched up with 3 levels in each book that you purchased. I don't know how I'd feel about purchasing a single separate level, and you know, you're eventually paying for, you know, 9 to 12 books possibly.
Well, to me, it's all you know, how much you can charge it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to start a game without at least 2 or 3 of the levels, because the players will always do something that you don't expect, and suddenly they're down. Because if it's a true mega dungeon, it's going to have, like, you know, weird sliding passageways, trap doors, maybe teleport points. And, you know, I one thing I really hate is, well, there's this thing that going to take you to the lower level, but I can't let it because I don't have the lower level yet.
Yeah. Oh, there's this fall-off. Yeah.
But if they are selling several levels, you know, are already out, then, like you said, if they're cheap enough, then, yeah, I'll go ahead and buy 2 or 3 of them at once, as long as they're available.
Yeah. Wouldn't hurt.
Yeah. Anyway, next email.
All right. Our next email is from Aaron Smale.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, says, hey, Sodcasters, just caught your last episode and was pleasantly surprised to hear that the Perfect Class article is still getting some play in the D&D world. Crispy, I'm really glad you like it. You youngins taint all bad.
Most of them, anyway.
For those interested, there is a link to the Perfect Class article at welshpiper.com/race-as-class/. I took the same approach with Swords and Wizardry Core and got the XP per ability costs down perfectly for the basic classes, Cleric, Fighter, Magic User, and Thief. However, the system breaks terribly when you add the subclasses from the Swords and Wizardry Complete rules. After a few weeks of trying to get the XP values to work with no joy, I realized that the effort was an exercise in diminishing returns. Here is my theory, which is mine. Subclasses like Assassin, Paladin, Ranger, Druid, and Monk were originally developed according to how well they worked in the respective authors' settings, rather than how well their XP advancement tables balanced with the core classes.
Thank you.
I'm guessing there were multiple versions of the Paladin, the Ranger, or any other subclass out in the wild before an, quote, official, end quote, version appeared in supplements. But if these versions grew out of different settings, it follows that they were defined by campaign flavor instead of rule books, which is another way of saying druids in your setting are different than druids in my setting. And that's probably the way it should be. So here's my current approach. All PCs start out as one of the basic classes, cleric, fighter, magic user, or thief. When they get to fourth level, they can pick a career path, which is essentially a subclass defined by a few special abilities and restrictions. These abilities and restrictions are made up by the GM and the players, who apply whatever balance feels right for the setting and the group's playing style. Mechanically, each career path uses its parent class's advancement table, hit dice, saving throws, etc. For example, in my campaign, Druid is a cleric career path, so XP, hit dice, saves, and to hit rolls are all the same as cleric. Special abilities, druids pick spells from the druidic spell list, can identify plants and animals, and get a +2 bonus versus on saves versus fire. Restrictions, druids can't use metal weapons or armor, must join a druidic order, and they suffer a reaction roll penalty in urban environments. Your druid might be completely different, but this system lets you base those differences on your setting, not a rule book. This approach has been championed by a few blogs, most notably Friar Dave's excellent Blood of Procopius. It's slick. Yeah, I don't know that one either. I'll have to look that up. It's slick, very flexible, and it saves a lot of time. You can create any career path you want. Just pick a parent class and apply a balance of special abilities and restrictions. For example, Liz could make a kobold hunter based on the fighter who gets combat bonuses versus kobolds, but suffers a charisma penalty because no one believes he's really as badass as he makes himself out to be.
And Liz would never play a hunter of kobolds.
I'm a friend!
Oh, yeah. Okay, I thought you meant he was a hunter who was a kobold.
Yeah.
She'd play that.
Yeah.
I probably would. Final note. You could start career paths at first level, but I recommend only for experienced players. Too many choices during character gen slows things down, overwhelms newbies, and doesn't always make in-game sense. Your mileage may vary, but the flexibility is there, so whatever works for you. Thanks for the great podcast. It's a welcome addition to my daily commute. Cheers, Aaron, The Bastard's Blade, Dark Age, Christian Europe, Pagan Warlords, and Demons with Silver for Blood.
And we'll have the email, we'll have the addresses in the show notes.
Yes.
For the links. So,
but you can find him pretty easily on a Google search, I imagine. So go for it.
Thank you, Eric. Was it Eric? Yeah.
Aaron.
Aaron. Thank you, Aaron.
The masculine Aaron Swale.
Yes. Thank you, Aaron.
The D&D mailing list?
OD&D, yeah. He's from the OD&D Guild.
Aaron.
Next mailing list, if you're not a part of it, join.
Aaron, that's a really great idea. I think it's really well thought out. It's nice to see a variation on Mentzer, because that's the first thing I thought of when he started talking. It's like, oh, you're not waiting till ninth level to change him to druid?
Yeah.
I don't want to wait till ninth level. I like his idea of fourth level.
Yeah, I do too. And basically, that's what it is. It's a variation on Mentzer, but it's a really good variation. I like the way he adds more stuff to him.
It's certainly workable. I don't know that I the whole idea, though, of druids, I mean, I would use his idea for, say, a paladin. I'm not sure I would for a druid, though, because the whole idea of, you know, I guess because in classic D&D, the cleric is always kind of a prototypical pseudo-Catholic kind of priest.
Yeah.
And the whole idea of him going on till fourth level and then deciding, I want to hug trees. It just doesn't seem to really work for me. Maybe it's, well, you know, I'm sure it's just me, but it just doesn't seem to click.
Well, I'm guessing right now, but I'm thinking that Frank wanted to. This is the kind of thing where you go to ninth level, boom, you can become a druid if you want. You know, ninth level, boom, you can become a type of paladin you want. I think this was the way of the later basic rewrites addressing the dual and multi-class thing in advance. In AD&D. You know, they had the multi-class, you had this.
Well, it also played off the 1E, you know, bard.
Yeah, that too. Except,
so know, not as hard to become one.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's like, I think they had the idea, oh, players want to multi-class and stuff, so we're going to have to, since we're racist class, we're going to have to address this, so why don't we do this? It's not much compensation, but, you know.
But again, thanks for the email.
Thank you, Aaron.
And
do we have any more?
We do.
We do.
Our next email is from Mike Portillo, or that's how I would, that's how I would pronounce it, being a South Texan by birth, but he may pronounce it Portillo, but I would pronounce it Portillo.
I'm Mike. Hiya, Mike.
Excellent first name, though.
Yes. Mike says, I thought the hardcore D6 people in the Classic Arena might find this D66 random table document useful. I've been developing it off and on for the past few weeks and got to the point today where I was ready to release it to the public. And he has the link, which we will include, but I'll say it for you anyway. www.carterca.co.uk/Portillo, P-O-R-T-I-L-L-O, /D66randomtables.pdf.
Which I've already downloaded and printed out and put in my DM book. I like it.
We have the DM, Glenn, stamp of approval. best regards, Mike Portillo, Carter.
I should get the old Dragnet sound effect for that with the guy at the end. Dink! Dink!
So when he says a D6 table, I assume it's like 11 through 66, basically 2D6, and you,
yeah, you read
run
his,
it like...
Yeah, you read his percentile.
Like his percentile. Okay.
Yeah.
I have to take a look at that.
I mean, he's got all sorts of things in there, and it's just like, you know, you don't have 100, you don't have like pages and pages. Just on, I put it on a double-sided sheet, stuck it in my book, and there it is.
Well, it may not be terribly classic, but I am a big fan of the D12. So if anyone can point me out to any blogs or places that have cool tables utilizing the D12,
Elizabeth,
I want to hear about it.
Elizabeth, write this down.
Yes.
Roll 1d12.blogspot.com, the Dungeon Dozen.
Cool.
Several times a week, this guy turns out 12-sided, a table for a 12-sided die of random stuff, and he's got tons. I think I've got like 250-page documents filled with his tables.
All right. I don't know who he is, but he's my new hero.
Dungeon Dozen. If you can't remember, just Google the Dungeon Dozen.
Woohoo!
Oh, he's all about
sweet
outsider. Any more?
Right.
All right. And we have one more email.
Okay, go.
Our last email is from Rust. And Rust,
hey, Rust
writes,
Rust never
says, hi, guys. Found this video of a game in 1981 on YouTube. A great window to the past for all RPG players and a priceless piece of gamer heritage. The title of the video is A Classic 1980s Dungeons and Dragons Session. And I'm not going to bother to spell out the YouTube address because it's a whole bunch of random letters and things like they normally are. But you can find it by that title. And we've watched it. It is really cool. Thank you for pointing that out to us, Rust. That was fantastic.
It's silent.
Silent. It's like somebody took a Super 8. They probably did. Took a Super 8 film.
It was probably a Super 8.
Yeah. But I watched it, and it's like the haircuts have changed, the clothes have changed, but a lot of things there. There's the Mountain Dew. There's the 1E screen. We even saw, a Gamma World book at one point?
Uh-huh. And they had cake. And they had the sharp-edged dice.
Dice. Yeah, that was the first thing Liz mentioned.
Pounded-edged dice that you get nowadays. They had the sharp-edged dice out there.
And it looks like playing in a basement. You even had a battle map.
So the address will be in the show notes.
Yes.
Take a look at it. You'll be glad you did. Unless you remember back then in 1981, then you'll feel pretty old.
And you'll say, I had that haircut.
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
All right. Well, keep writing in. We'd love to hear your opinions. Where would they write, Glenn, if they wanted to send an email?
SaveOrDiePodcast@gmail.com.
And now, without further ado, we will talk about
What are we going to? Game on?
Yes. On. As we mentioned earlier, we're going to be trying something a little different. So this time, this section of Game On, we're going to discuss the module from a player's perspective. As if we were playing this module, how would we feel it would work?
What's the name of the module, Mike?
The name of the module, if we haven't mentioned it enough, is Pyramid of the Dragon from Small Niche Games.
A labyrinth lore and adventure for 4 to 6 characters of 5 to 7th level. Written by Peter Spahn.
Yep.
Released about a year ago or something like that. Yeah.
I think so.
2010.
2 years ago. Okay. So it's 2 years ago. It's out there.
But it seems like it was only yesterday.
Yes.
Now, as written, how many sessions do you all think this would last?
Well, personally, because players never do what you expect them to do, I would say whatever number of sessions you're planning on this running, add an extra session onto it.
Oh, that's standard, yeah.
I mean, if you're looking at it and thinking, my players will get through this in 2 sessions, no, it's going to take at least 3, because they're going to do something weird that has nothing to do with what the module has. They'll decide to spend 3 hours talking to townspeople and,
yeah.
Spend a whole session buying rope. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I would concur on that. Looking at it, I thought it would run about 3 sessions, particularly with the Marshland adventures. It could probably go in as little as 1, but that would require the players to catch every single plot hook and follow it along.
Yeah, and stay on track.
Slavishly.
And that never happens.
Do you think the level is acceptable?
Yeah.
Do you think it's too lightweight, too heavyweight for that level range of 4 to 6 characters?
5 to 7th, I think you could probably run it maybe a little higher level. You know, it's always, when you're dealing with dragons, it's always kind of like,
Yeah, I wish Crispy was here for the Labyrinth Lord question.
Yeah.
Because I noticed with the dragons, there was nothing there that specifically talked about the number of times they could use their breath weapon.
Yeah.
So do you know if in Labyrinth Lord it's can they keep using it? Do they have a limit per day?
I couldn't tell you without a copy of it in front of me.
Yeah. Well, if they don't have limits per day, I would probably say go to the higher end of that level range.
Well,
I'd want to have a lot of henchmen.
Well, if we don't have LL here, let's go to the source BX. What would BX say about dragons per day?
Well, what would Mincer say?
What would Mincer say about 3? I think it's 3 to 5 times.
Okay. 3. Then, yeah, I think probably a 5/7th would work with 4 to 6 characters. Otherwise, I think I would probably want them to have a few more henchmen or maybe a bit more magic.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's not like you need like a whole entourage for this one. But it would be handy to have a couple of extra guys around. What do you think, Liz?
What do you think?
If there's no limits on breath weapon, then, yeah, you need lots of extra cannon fodder. I mean, henchmen.
This is where running kobolds comes in real handy.
Indeed. Crunch all you want. We'll make more. As a player, you know, looking at us being a player, you know, you would, depending on how dragons are handled in the Labyrinth Lord rules, you know, you certainly would want to think about having some henchmen with your party. When we get into what we would do as, you know, DMs running this, you know, I'll say my piece there, but
And let me jump in to point out also, I forgot to mention earlier, is that this module is advertised both for Labyrinth Lord and Osric.
Right.
So Osric would be 1E, which would be limited number of breath weapon attacks.
And I assume you could probably use it with Labyrinth Lord with the Advanced Edition Companion.
Yeah, he mentions in there specifically that it's actually, I think it's geared a little more for that, but we'll talk more later on that one.
That's fine.
But talking on the subject of dragon limited breath weapon.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah. It seems like a trivial point, but it can really make a difference in your game.
Well, considering the potential number of dragons you can run into in this one, it's... Yeah.
What, three?
Possibly four.
Yeah, possibly four. That's right. I mean, now one's a good guy, but, you know...
So...
It's going to happen.
I like the water sort of swamp base of it because I grew up in the Mississippi Delta, so it brings back memories.
This has a real good feeling of like the old Lizard series.
Salt Marsh,
AD&D.
For 1E, yeah.
Tomb of the Lizard King and all that kind of stuff. It's got a great feeling, Temple of the Frog type of stuff.
Yeah, it's got that, you know, going to find some ruined thing out in the middle of a swamp.
Everything's
you know, moist. And just this, yeah. But I liked that. I thought it was a nice touch.
It's funny. I just finished reading this, and my grandson's got a copy of on DVD of the Dungeons & Dragons animated series. He was watching an episode where they were fighting lizard men and... what are those frogmen called? I forget.
Bullywugs?
Bullywugs.
Well, I don't think they called the Bullywugs
in the
animated show.
They called them Bullywugs.
Yeah. They did? Okay.
Yeah. You're thinking of the Bog Beasts, which were different.
They were in the middle right between Lizardmen and Bullywugs, and it's like, wow, it's just like this module. This is great.
Mm-hmm. But, I would say probably, depending on the dragon and breath... That would depend on the level of characters you would want to run in it.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. And you've got the small town, so it'd be very easy to probably hire some people who would be willing to act as, you know, hirelings for you the duration of the adventure.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Another thing from a player perspective that I thought was kind of cool is that you can potentially run into an NPC from... the village from Blood Moon Rising.
Okay.
The Garanton.
The guy who had been in the
games there.
Yeah, the competition.
Yeah, which gives a little continuity if you've already played Blood Moon Rising. You know, it gives you kind of a campaign context there, which is nice.
Pretty much. DM gets to do a little character development between the two, which is nice.
Well, and, you know, if your character's been there, he can go, you know, he can talk to this guy potentially and go, oh, yeah, I know that village. You lost the games there? Oh, well, you suck, you know.
Nice.
You wouldn't want to go investigate.
And then he tries to kill you.
Yeah.
And then you have the nerve to be surprised when he tries to kill you. Yeah. So any other thoughts as a player if you were playing this?
Just a heck of a lot of fun.
Yeah, you've got a good balance of different things you can do. You can do some stuff within the town. You can go out into the swamp. There's an old abandoned temple. There's, you know, all kinds of settings you as a player could decide to explore in any particular order.
It's almost
which I think gets back to the idea of this could actually last more than one or two sessions.
Yeah, depending on how much time you spent at any one of those locales. You know, you could spend an entire session just doing stuff in the swamp or just doing stuff in the temple area.
It's like a best of.
You know, even just hanging out in the town.
Or keep on the borderlands squared, you know, I think. If not squared, at least on a par.
To me, it's like... Okay, here's the adventure, but we're going to put it in a sandbox.
So yeah, well, that's what I meant, like keep on the borderlands.
Yeah, Exactly. You got the Caves of Chaos, you got the Keep, you got all the area around it. Yeah.
Yeah. And even when you solve the quote-unquote main point, you could still hang around there and do some low-level adventures.
Yes. And
with some local stuff.
One or two of those towns make great home bases for adventurers, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, well, unless someone has any other player issues, we'll head on into DM Fiat.
Okay.
Nope. Sorry.
What?
Nope, you're wrong. Look it up.
I don't have to look it up. It's common knowledge.
Nope. No, no, no.
DM Fiat. Now, looking at this module from behind the screen, what stood out to you guys?
Crunchiness.
I would say, yeah, you know, getting back to the dragon thing for DM Fiat, whatever the rules were, I would probably put a cap on the amount of breath weapons. If the Labyrinth Lord rules do, you know, go with that, cool. If they don't, I'd say this is what I'm doing with it.
I'm going to second that.
Yeah.
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 10 years ago, I wouldn't have thought anything of it, and then just like basically paid the price. Yeah, I would cap the number of times.
As a DM, I'm pretty weeny compared to others. I'm not all that interested in trying for TPKs. I'd rather have my players' characters survive if at all possible. I'm not going to go out of my way to try to, you know, screw them over. If they do something dumb, that's on their own heads, but yeah. I never go into a game deliberately trying to make things so hard that someone's going to die.
Well, plus, it kind of ruins the whole flow of the adventure if your players see, you know, a red dragon and then run screaming like scared girls.
They yeah. immediately leave the area. Dragons, we're going. It's like, no, yeah. Wait, this is the adventure.
There were players like that back then, though. You know, they didn't all go, okay, red dragon, let's jump on him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, especially if they know that you allow unlimited breath weapons for your dragons.
Yeah, or find out the hard way.
Yeah. So, something he did add in here, I don't know if it's in Labyrinth Lord per se, but I think it's an interesting idea, uh-huh. is the idea of the dragon gullets.
Yeah, I thought that was neat.
Yeah, where they could carry some magic items with them or the best bits of their treasure rather than just having to leave the whole hoard.
Yeah, it's like...
kind of like a dragon version of a...
Chipmunk.
Yeah, a chipmunk or a kangaroo, you know, with their pouch. You know, I'll just put some stuff in here and...
Yeah, and with
their portable suitcase.
And the corpse of the black dragon, it gives a little bit of reward. Not much, but a little bit for players who actually go and take a look at the corpse and see what they can find.
Yeah, don't want to get too greedy.
Yeah, but although that does bring me to a gripe...
What?
It's a mild gripe, and it's one of the things I would change, is at one point when you make it to the ruined city and PCs supposedly see the red dragon sitting there going through the stuff that the Froggles
yeah.
have pulled I out love them, that name.
Out of the temple for him to look at, and he's sifting through them to see if he can find the blood gem, which, by the way, is the whole point of this.
And there's no gems listed as part of the treasure.
Not a single gem, and not even thing that might plausibly be a gem. It's kind of like, well, does he really need to sift through it? There's not so much there. He could look at it and just, you know, from a distance and tell it's not there. I would probably stick a few, you know, quartz gems or something there, just, you know, so he's got something to sift through.
Sifon, what?
Cubic zirconia.
Genuine diamels. Yeah. If you order now, they'll double your offer.
Yeah. I probably had a few.
That's a minor gripe. I like the whole idea, and I really like the idea of the competing player character party.
Yeah.
Of adventures. I really like that.
I like that idea because it's the old classic, okay, they think we're them. Let's just go with it.
And your group of
adventurers.
Yeah. And you're not the only group of adventurers in the world.
Right.
Yeah. And you're going with it, but at the same time, you're also going to be thinking in the back of your head, the real party that these guys are waiting for could show up at any minute.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're playing along to see how far you could get, but you're also thinking at the same time, the game could be up literally at any moment. We don't know when these guys are going to arrive, and then there's going to be a throwdown. You know?
Which is a nice time limit so that, you know, the players don't spend too long rummaging around the temple.
Yep.
It's because, you know, they know the gig may be up soon.
Yeah. But there's a lot of good... I was going to say there's a lot of good role-playing opportunity in that.
Yeah. I was going to say, if I was running the adventure, I would probably make the Froggles love the name Froggles.
I kept hearing them, and I thought Fraggles.
Down
from Fraggle Rock. They're killing the Fraggles!
That's part of why I love it.
Well, I can see Froggle. I kept seeing like a Nintendo, you know, like controller in my hand, making him jump across logs and stuff.
Well, I know what he was going for. He was going for the Frogman Bullywug thing, and from that context, it's a pretty good name. It's just too close to Fraggle for me.
Well.
Is Bullywug copyrighted or something? Or
I don't know.
It will be. Who knows? But anyway, I would take the Froggles up from one being one-hit die critters to maybe three-hit die critters. I mean, granted, there are a lot of them, but, you know, at one point in the adventure, it talks about how the Red Dragon is watching the characters, and if they defeat the Froggles, he offers to parlay with them. It's like, I can't imagine a Red Dragon being willing to parlay with a bunch of people who defeated basically a group of one-hit die creatures. It's like, almost anyone could do that. So I'd kick up Froggles a little bit to make that, you know, to make it seem more sensible to me. You may not want to do that, especially if your party of adventurers is fairly small. If you've only got four people, then you might not want to make the entire Froggle tribe, you know, three hit dice.
They fight for a while, then you bring out their champion, a troglodyte. Yeah, beat this.
I don't know. I don't know that I'd necessarily raise their hit die, but I might have them inflicting more damage somehow, maybe by some obscure swamp poison or something on their weapons.
Or just tactics.
Tactics? What are those?
We're talking like, you know, like swamp traps and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Although it does, I don't know why, but it reminds me, when I first started reading this module, it looked very railroady. When I came to the first thing about the Black Dragon and everything.
Uh-huh.
But then as I kept reading, I realized, you know, this isn't railroady. He's just giving several detailed potential plot hooks.
Right.
And I like that. I thought that was really well done. You know, it's not a railroad. He's just giving you a very detailed options of what you can use. And if the players don't bite on that, then try this. And if they still don't, try this.
Another module writer would just give it a paragraph. This is what happened. He goes into detail for the setup for the plot hooks.
Yeah, that's what I mean. And yeah. I agree. If by the third time your players still aren't biting, then just shelve the adventure. They're not going to go anywhere and just pull something out.
Yeah.
They're being players.
Just shove them off to Hamlet and, you know, that kind of thing.
Send them to the Lost City. They can't get away from that.
Yeah. So what do we think? Too lethal? Not lethal enough? I mean, aside from what we were going to change. I mean, you could always make something more lethal. I think it was just right for the level.
on the whole, I think the lethality is good. I'd, you know, switch some things up here and there, hopefully to create the same overall effect, you know, but that's just personal quibbles on my part. You know, it's like, well, I wouldn't have this, but I do like this, and I'd even make that a little more powerful than it is. But yeah, I would say, you know, the overall effect, you've got pretty much the right amount of danger and, you know, things to strive against, you know, for the level party that it's made for.
Right.
Yeah. I think it's pretty usable right out of the box, as it were.
And you can plunk it anywhere.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that reference to Blood Moon Rising isn't necessary to the plot. It's just kind of thrown in there as a freebie.
You got a world with a swamp area in there, you could plunk it in there.
Yeah. So, not much changes really needed here for good play, I think.
Yeah, good for neophyte DMs.
But again, don't expect. I think it highly unlikely you'll get this done in one setting,
no.
session, unless you're going to have like a 12-hour session.
Yeah. Convention, maybe.
A 12-hour convention session, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe an open gaming or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Shall we move on?
On to random encounters.
We take what we want and leave the rest. Just like your salad bar.
Nothing up must leave. Presto!
You will come up no more.
What? Huh? What'll come out no more?
Random encounters.
Random encounters.
Yes.
In this format, we're going to try to look at our favorite encounter in this module, either a set piece or a wandering monster.
I got one.
Liz! No, just kidding. Okay, Glenn. What's your favorite encounter?
It's chapter 2, I think. Into the Swamps. I'm not just one encounter. I love the way they do the Blood Marsh random encounters. It's not just a list of monsters and things you can run into in the swamp. It's actual little mini encounters.
Yeah, and a lot of them, which otherwise might have been set piece, they don't need to be set piece. It's a swamp, you know, might run into it, you might not.
Yeah.
It makes more sense being a random table than necessarily having, this is a map of the Blood Swamp, and here is exactly where the giant crayfish are. Like, you don't need that.
And it's not just a chart going, oh, I rolled a lizard man. You run into a lizard man party. You know, that kind of thing.
A lizard man who is angry. Yeah.
Yeah. But it gives you, like, I'm looking like there's, they wade through the water with giant leeches. Something happens where with canoes with giant alligators. It gives you something to do other than you're running into the monster. You're going to fight it.
Alligators, 3. Armor class, 6. Yeah.
So the monsters are there, but you can do something with it. Froggle hunting party. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Froggle.
Froggle hunting party. That's what it says right here. A lurking
on a side note.
Yes.
When they were talking about in the ruined city, when they're talking about the Froggles and the giant red dragon looking at them and threatening them, I pictured that scene of the big ogres in Fraggle Rock and the Fraggles running from them and the huge ogre chasing them. That was thought of. But anyway, yours is basically just the swamp.
Yeah, it's the whole random – the way they set up the random encounters in the swamp, I really like that.
Okay.
It's really something different.
I can agree, even though it's kind of cheating because you don't choose one.
Oh, please.
I liked the willow weeping encounter.
Uh-huh.
With the trees themselves actually being the monster.
Yeah.
And you're just walking along, minding your own business, and, you know, oh, look! Although, I probably would not have the obvious pile of weapons and armor because that would tip off your players a little too easily. You know.
Is that the one in the fairy circle?
pile of weapons and armor in a cluster of four willow trees.
Oh, yes.
So they go over to investigate, and the willows attack. It's like, not sure if I'd have that much stuff out.
Why don't you just put a big X on the ground?
Yes.
With a dashed line leading to it.
Yes.
Have a sign saying free pie with an arrow, you know.
Better
yeah,
off.
If PCs fall into that, they deserve it.
Plus one.
It's
plus
like, I like the idea of the trees.
Yes.
I like the idea of the trees. I'd change it a little bit to make it a little less obvious to, you know, players who are paying attention. Hey, this could be a trap, you know.
True.
But that was one of my favorite encounters.
Yeah, it reminded me of the later one with the green slime in the temple.
Uh-huh.
Boy, that's harsh. But anyway.
How about you, Mike?
But not my favorite.
What's yours?
My favorite was the graveyard in the swamp.
Mm-hmm.
Although I might question how easily it would be to set a graveyard in a swamp.
look at New Orleans.
Yeah, that at least has levees sometimes.
Yeah.
But I love how it's this iconic, you know, slimy, old, scary graveyard, and the monster is not undead. It's a shambling mound.
Now that's interesting.
Because any players who want, you know, PCs that wander in there, you know they're going to be thinking, undead, undead.
There's got to be undead.
We're in a swamp. Will-o-wisps, at the least, we're going to run into because they're undead, and this is a graveyard, da-da-da-da. Nope.
Yeah, the cleric's got his holy symbol out, ready to turn at any moment.
And, nope, it's a shambling mound.
No undead for you. 1 year.
And for side note, just for general DMs looking at this, even though it is Labyrinth Lord, and it does use some AD&D-isms like the Shambling Mound and some AD&D spells like Knock, but their stats for them are given in the appendix. So you don't have to have the Advanced Edition Companion or Osric if you're running this pure for BXD&D. You've got it in the back. You don't have to hunt.
Yeah, that's good.
But yeah, that's my favorite encounter because to me, that's a great bait and switch.
Yeah. So what do we got? You got mine, the random encounters in the swamp. We have Liz's, which is the trees.
Also in the swamp.
And also in the swamp. Everything we like is in the swamp. Why don't we just run the swamp?
Yeah. Our favorite. I mean, I did like sort of the idea in the temple of the various elements and how the elementals were involved. But really, my fave has to be the graveyard in the swamp. That's got to be mine.
Which will make an appearance in Mike's next game he runs. I hope to see it at the convention if you run something.
Never. I would never, ever do that. Although I have thought about having a shambling mound coated in green slime.
Oh, ew. God.
Because, well, it's vegetable. Yeah, it's a green slime golem. Anyway.
Yucky.
So, yeah. I don't like you anymore.
I know. Anyway, but yeah, those are our favorite. If any of you listeners end up picking up this module, which you should, and look it over and think you have a different favorite random encounter, write in and tell us. And yeah. Tell us why. Again, what's that address?
SaveOrDiePodcast@gmail.com.
Accent optional when you type it. And let's head to, unless there's something else anyone wishes to say on the encounters?
Are they great?
No, I think we're good.
Okay. Let's head to products of your imagination and wrap this module up.
Your dungeon master has placed you in a dreadfully precarious position.
They're the Cheetos!
They're right next to you.
Well, all you do is we play the characters we talked about earlier when we run around and stuff.
I want to show you a trick Mother showed me when you weren't around.
Use your lightning bolt.
Victory is yours.
I'm attacking the darkness.
Dungeons & Dragons game. Products of your imagination.
You're not there. You're getting drunk.
products of your imagination.
Okay, now, from what I understand, it's available in RPG Now as, what, a PDF only?
PDF only.
Okay.
$4.95, wasn't it?
Yeah, yes. That's a pretty good price, yeah. Actually, for that.
Yeah, that's a good PDF price.
Yeah.
You get. There's a lot of stuff, there's a lot of crunch to it, and a lot of stuff you can steal. Like, Mike's going to steal that graveyard.
I assume everybody's going to steal, but yeah, it's, what is it, like 30-something pages? It's 33 pages.
37
pages. Okay, yeah, because the art. And speaking of art and layout, I can't really judge that, so what about you guys?
I enjoyed the art, you know. It was not bad at all. Miguel Santos is the name of the artist, and there's enough art to make it interesting, but it's not filled with so much art that you feel like you've paid money for a book of art with very little, you know, text in it.
Exactly.
A lot of fluff.
Yeah, and, you know, that's irritated me about a lot of the newer gaming products that come out, and perhaps I should not blame White Wolf for this, but White Wolf was the first stuff that I really noticed that's starting to happen in, so it always kind of sticks in my mind. You know, you've got all of these books with lots of glossy pages of full color art and plates and things, and, you know, it's like, you've got art on every page and very little text, right. And I'm not interested in buying an art book. You know, I want a game book.
I bought those books before. It's like I'm buying a coffee table book or something.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, so I like the mix. You know, you've got primarily text, and, you know, maybe this sounds strange because I'm an artist myself, mm-hmm. but I like that you have, you know, more information, and there's just enough art in there to really give you a good feel for things here and there within the book.
Right. Okay, to clear it up, the art pretty much consists of the cover and three pages of maps. Now, I was
there's no interior art?
No.
Really none. And, you know,
I find that okay. For what I get. Now, I just looked it over again, and excuse me, I talked to Brian, our engineer here, who's also, by the way, the fourth member of our team now, who cannot be here. He did not like
Sir not appearing.
Sir not appearing on this podcast. He didn't like the
just like Christmas.
Maps. Yeah, he didn't like the maps. And I looked over the maps, and I thought, you know, yeah, they're kind of simple, but it gives me just enough information that I need. I don't have any problem with them. They're detailed enough that I
functional.
Can just, yeah, functional. And they're hand drawn. And you know, I'm not looking for Diesel LaForce. I'm looking for something I can use. And I think they're all right.
I had Diesel LaForce once. Got a shot cleared it right up.
You had to tell him that as an adventure.
Yeah, the maps are good, and you've got the detailed maps, and you've also got a cutaway map of the shrine, so you get an idea of, you know, what it looks like, you know, looking straight at it as opposed to the top-down layout of the rooms themselves.
Right, right.
That seems pretty useful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the text is straight two-column. You know, sans serif font, very clear.
Old school goodness.
Old school goodness. Old man like me can read it without much help. So it's not like some of the, I mean, I'm reading through an old White Dwarf D&D module right now. Even with my glasses, I'm going, I can't see it. They give me a chart at one point that is like, I am not kidding, about an inch and a half big. This is a table. It's like, I can't read this. Is this scribbling or what? You know, but this is good. This is good. It's like 10 point font, and it's very good, clear, gets the point across. So the layout is good.
And Liz, how do you feel about the layout?
I also agree. You've got the standard two-column format. No one tries to, you know, get fancy with sidebars and things like that.
Right.
It's a very good, straightforward layout. You know, when you purchase the PDF, you know, you are purchasing, you know, you're purchasing information. You know, there's a little bit of art, but it's not a whole bunch of art, and you wind up with only, you know, 10 pages worth of adventure text. It's like, no, you are getting, you know, a lot of bang for your buck as far as stuff to run your adventure with, as opposed to, you know, a lot of fluff, and you wind up with not lots left over.
Exactly.
And as we pointed out earlier, once the main Pyramid of the Dragon issue is resolved, you could still adventure in this area a bit longer, a few more sessions, just with the stuff in the swamp and other things.
I could see small niche games coming out with like more modules in this area or leaking. They're beginning to build a world, it looks like.
Well, they have sent, that we will be interviewing in the future, a campaign setting book.
Yes.
Whose name escapes me at the moment, Chronicles of Something. But anyway, I would not be surprised to find that it's actually the campaign world that all these modules are set in.
In fact, I believe they mention it is in that world. I'm looking through it real quick here, and I can't see the name. But yeah, you're exactly right.
Okay. Well, on the whole, I prefer data to maps and art. I mean, naturally, maps are necessary, but
yeah.
I mean, worst comes to worst, I can always throw together my own map.
That's true.
It's the data that I'm paying for.
Yeah, when it comes right down to me, the bottom line to me, yeah, it's the data.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can do your own pictures.
And I think Peter Spahn is good, especially with his NPCs, because it's a tendency that you either get not enough information on NPCs or too much.
Right.
In modules. I mean, otherwise sometimes you end up with the Castellan, the Tavern Keeper, or, you know, you end up with a module where, you know, every third chambermaid has secret schemes against four other people in the castle, or, you know, a secret, you know, half-elf lover she doesn't talk about or whatever. And it's like, I don't need to know that much.
No.
And I'm not going to use most of it. But he manages to, I think, to hit just right in the sweet spot in between those extremes.
Yes, sir.
Enough information to give you some ideas, but not to necessarily tie you down either.
Not drowning you with detail.
Yeah.
Because there's even supplements to do that. Forgotten Realms, I'm looking at you.
Drowning in
detail.
Yeah, there's campaigns that just give you so much. And there are people who like that. And, you know, if that works for you, that's great. Personally, I can't stand it because I feel like as a DM, it straitjackets me too much.
It does a bit. Too many players.
But anyway, so for the grand finale here.
Oh,
how many dragons? Glenn.
Oh, four.
Four?
Four. Yeah.
Four.
Straight four. I think it's a great adventure with a lot of crunch, and I think it has great replay material. I mean, great replay potential.
Mm-hmm.
And skinning, reskinning, and ripping off potential. I'm going to be very disappointed if you're at the con running a game and that swamp graveyard is not in there, Mike.
Well, I'll put it in there just for you, and I'll tell all the players that this is
Glenn's fault.
Yeah, this is Glenn's fault that this graveyard's in here. Okay.
No, all right, Liz.
I am also going to give it four dragons.
Wow.
Why?
Well, like I said, you've got a good mix of town adventure, swamp adventure, temple adventure. There's lots of directions a player could go in, and no matter where they go, there's something interesting that's going to happen to them.
Mm-hmm. Like the Chinese curse?
Yes. The only thing that could make this module better, in my opinion, would be the inclusion of a rumor table because I'm all about rumor tables. But
yeah, yeah, a rumor table, rumor that yeah, rumor table, and having it on a D12.
Yes, yes. Rumor table with D12. Dungeon keep that in mind for your next adventure.
Well, 1d12.blogspot.com. Anyway, yeah, you're right. So how about you, Mike?
Well, for once, I'm going to go along with the crowd and give it a 4.
Ooh.
I was really, in fact, I'm a little disappointed in that you've read it, Liz, because now I can't really use it on you and as well as other players. But
sure
there
can.
Are certain bits and pieces I'm going to steal, especially the NPC party.
Yeah.
Those guys are great.
Those guys are a lot of friends.
Never find a more wretched hive of scum and villains. Although I must ask, and this is not aimed at this module, it's aimed at the whole Dungeons & Dragons genre in general.
Yes.
Why is it that powerful female villains are never ugly?
They're always hot?
Always hot. They're always 13-plus charismas. Why is that? And I can't even just say charisma, because, you know, it's they usually say in their description, very attractive. I guess it's, you know, to the genre.
They're playing to the audience.
And playing to the audience, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's obviously not enough girls playing the game, because I am not seeing nearly as much beefcake in modules as I would like to.
And let me ask Mike a question.
Module authors out there, you have heard.
D12 rumor table and beefcake.
And beefcake.
I have spoken.
Mike, could I ask you a question?
What?
Would you or I, for that matter, have brought up that question if we were not married?
Yes, I think I would, actually.
Okay.
I think I would.
An honest man. Good.
I think, I'm not saying that it's bad. It's just, well, it's...
Expected?
Expected, yeah. And, you know, I thought about it. And, you know, maybe I'm going to write a module, my next one for Troll Lord or somebody, where I'm going to intentionally put plain women in it. Not horribly ugly. Because there have been a few evil, you know, women who are just like, you know, hags or something.
So you're going to have bitches for witches. Cool.
No. Average women.
Okay, average women.
They not 18s, but not 3s either.
They do exist, yes.
Exist. Yeah. Not that I know many of them, since I'm married to one of the 18s, but, you know, hey.
Oh, thank you very much.
Me too.
That's still not going to save you if you do the shambling mound covering the green slime at me, but thank you.
Yeah, I don't think she's still forgiven me about the zombies full of rot grubs.
Oh my gosh.
That was incredibly nasty.
Yeah. And on that note,
I guess we're at the end of another adventure.
As we travel down the lonely highway.
Heading for...
Fleeing. Who are you fleeing, Glenn?
I'm fleeing from the fleas. Actually, I'm fleeing from the stupid shambling mound you have following me around all over the place.
And Liz?
I'm fleeing from the swarm of mosquitoes that descends upon you at some point during the swamp.
And doing a hit point of damage?
Yeah. Yes.
And here I thought you were fleeing toward the kobold market to buy some kobolds.
I'm fleeing toward the kobold market to buy some deep woods off to get these mosquitoes out of here.
Yes, I'm almost out of the waves. Hey, look, there's some trees with some armor there.
Whereas I am headed down the highway, proudly riding a dragon with unlimited breath weapons.
Yay!
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Yep.
Save or die, can you make the save?
All that kind of stuff.
Run while you still can. Bye.
Bye.
Free arc.
Good night, everybody.